Good morning. Call the hearing to order. I want to thank the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee Chairman for holding this hearing on NASA's Space Shuttle Program. Chairman McCain will be in, I think, in about a half an hour or 45 minutes to chair the hearing. Until that time, I'll be chairing that. Before I begin, I understand that the recent hurricanes in Florida did significant damage to our space facilities there. Saw an article this morning's paper, and want you to know that I share the concerns for NASA's people and programs in Florida and offer my full support in our efforts to recover from the damage, Mr. Director, on that, and to all Floridians. I think we all watched that storm come in, the storm the size of Texas over Florida, and just amazed at the power and the destructive capacity, and we'll want to hear about what that has its impact. But our first and foremost concern is for the people, and we hope and pray that they're safe and sound and will be able to recover, as well as for all Floridians. And we'll hear from Senator Nelson here in a minute and give us a more personalized detail of what's been taking place. The Space Shuttle is a magnificent machine, and it's clear that the dedicated and talented people at NASA are doing their best to return it to flight. I am concerned, though, to be sure, about the schedule and the cost of this return, and that's what I want to particularly focus on in this hearing this morning. I'm confident that with enough money and time, we will succeed, but the more we spend on this legacy system, the more we mortgage our future. I believe in the administration's space exploration program. I believe space offers enormous opportunity for our people. I'm concerned that our economic and military competitors around the world are breathing down our neck in space. This is one competition we can't afford to lose. Every dollar spent on space exploration must be spent extremely wisely. As a space shuttle return to flight costs mount and schedules become less certain, the time has come to find alternatives, I believe, to the shuttle. As I've said before, we're never going to realize the benefits of space without full mobilization of all the assets that we have available to us as a country, including the private sector. A number of private concerns, including some of the nation's largest aerospace firms, have told me they have affordable, near-term options to offload some and perhaps all of the space shuttle's launch requirements. In previous testimony, NASA said it hasn't considered alternatives to the space shuttle for completing and maintaining the space station. Yet recent external studies, such as one done by the Planetary Society, suggest that as few as 10 to 12 shuttle flights, and not 30 as the plan now stands, could suffice to complete the space station, if alternative means of access are also used. For these reasons, I've asked, in concert with my House colleagues, for a GAO analysis of these issues. I helped commission the Congressional Budget Office to study the issue of space exploration costs. They tell me that the President's space exploration program is affordable within the money we budgeted, provided we come to grips with an affordable launch system. Meanwhile, every day we focus our resources to maintain the current shuttle infrastructure is a day we delay our people's exploration and expansion into the solar system. This is an important issue. I look forward to hearing NASA's information today about the program, because we do want to see what it is that's costing us and what the time frame is going to be on return to flight on the space shuttle, and is there a way for us to be able to go to fewer flights and then move those resources into Moon, Mars, and beyond in the manned space program. I want to turn the program over, the podium over to Senator Nelson, and again, our condolences to all of Florida and all Floridians for Hurricane Francis, and as I understand, maybe another one coming through. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, if I'm a little blunt, you will please understand that I have been dealing with hurricanes for the last 4.5 weeks. And as reflective of Floridians, our patience is wearing thin. Even though there has been a magnificent response and lessons learned from Hurricane Andrew, where one level of government was not talking to the other level of government, those lessons were learned, and the response has been very good. But some of the damage that was done is illustrative of mistakes that have been made. And I specifically want to take this opportunity, while we have the administrator here, with regard to the damage at the Kennedy Space Center. As no doubt you will share with this committee, at least 1,000 panels were lost from the vehicle assembly building. These are large panels, panels usually 10 by 4 feet. In one other section, a major section that was lost. Why? It's simply because NASA has been robbing Peter to pay Paul, because NASA has not had the increases that it has needed to do an ambitious space program, and you can't do space flight on the cheap. And so NASA, in order to try to do everything it wants to do, takes away from where? Maintenance of facilities. And in the corrosive salt air of an ocean launch site, you're going to have degradation of facilities, and I think we're beginning to see that. And the VAB is an example. And fortunately, no hardware, per the briefing that I had from Jim Kennedy, who is the director of the Kennedy Space Center, no hardware was harmed. But you've basically got 1,000 panels off, which means you've got 1,000 windows open if this next hurricane were to come. And what kind of damage would that do to the VAB and our ability to stack the spacecraft vertically, which is where that's done in the VAB? But there were more problems. Now, fortunately, in the 3 orbiter processing facilities, there was no damage, but the fact is that power went out. And in Discovery that's being prepared in OPF number 3, power went out. Why? Why was there not the generator capacity there that would kick in when the power went out? And although it does not appear that there was any damage to the spacecraft or Discovery's preparation, is this, again, another example of robbing Peter to pay Paul over the last decade that does not give us the maintenance? Now, what we're talking about is nothing new. We've been talking about this for years. But it's an allocation of resources. And I think it's finally coming home that Florida is a place that is threatened by windstorms, and we better get it right. And then there was a question of the building that housed major computers as a computer center that did sustain significant damage on the roof. And again, why is not a computer nerve center housed in a building that is constructed to withstand hurricane force winds? Now, eerily, the track of Ivan is forecasted to come right over western Cuba. Does that sound familiar to a hurricane 3.5 weeks ago named Charlie? And if it takes a jog to the right like Charlie did in southwest Florida, coming right across the state of Florida, and Lord help us that this does not occur, but it would be headed straight for the Kennedy Space Center. In the last one, the winds, Charlie, only brushed the north end of the Space Center since it exited at Daytona Beach. But even so, KSC suffered $750,000 worth of damage. So in this $2 billion that we passed last night, that's just for FEMA, that's nothing for NASA. And in the $2.5 billion additional that I have requested of the president to request for Department of Agriculture and FEMA and Department of Defense and Department of Commerce, is any of that going to go to NASA? I think we better make our request known and get serious about our budgets for NASA in the future. This space program is too important to every American that it be successful. And we've got to stop robbing Peter to pay Paul. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And as I said at the outset, our thoughts and prayers do go up with the Floridians. We have two people on the panel, Honorable Sean O'Keefe, Administrator of NASA, and Lieutenant General Thomas P. Stafford, U.S. Air Force retired, co-chairman of the Return to Flight Task Force. Gentlemen, we look forward to both your testimony. Director O'Keefe, let's take your comments and your testimony first. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Nelson, Senator Lott, pleasure to see you as well. And I've got a statement for the record I'll submit and just briefly summarize.
It'll be put in the record.
Appreciate the opportunity to appear before the committee along with General Tom Stafford to discuss our efforts to return the shuttle to flight and raise the bar in all of our mission operations. Right after the Columbia accident, I certainly had the opportunity in a joint session of this committee and the House Science Committee to pledge that we would find the cause of the Columbia accident, correct the problems we find, and return the shuttles to flight, and we're doing just that. I'm pleased to report today that about the tangible progress we're making towards achieving those milestone-driven return-to-flight goals, and we are accomplishing those as we move along here. It is all the members of the NASA family, I think, have been constantly diligent, which is the minimum price of admission for conducting research and exploration on behalf of the American public. Throughout NASA, we have had many examples of diligence and deliberate action we've taken to improve the conditions of all three shuttle orbiters and to minimize the risk associated with flight. We've conditionally closed 5 of the 15 recommendations of the Columbia Accident Investigation Board, and the Return to Flight Task Group, co-chaired by General Stafford, and his co-chair as well, Dick Cubby, who was the pilot on the return to flight effort after Challenger, have concurred in those 5 of 15 recommendations at this point. The Stafford-Cubby Task Group are all external experts. They are dedicated professionals, and we are incredibly grateful to them for all the time and effort they put into assuring that we remain diligent in this particular task. They, probably more than any other collection of folks, are looking forward to return to flight so they can return to their day jobs on a regular basis, but they are dedicating a tremendous amount of time right now to assure that we have looked at every option and that we're selecting the best options as we move forward in order to meet the recommendations of the Columbia Accident Investigation Board. We're making progress on the remaining 10 return-to-flight recommendations and hope to close them out by year's end, but again, we'll look at how we track on that and what the response is from the Stafford-Cubby Task Group. Throughout the agency, we're striving to transform the culture and the organization so that all employees are empowered to speak up on issues impacting mission safety as well as our approach to how we return to flight. In an agency-wide initiative, the outstanding engineers serving at our one-year-old NASA Engineering and Safety Center, located at the Langley Research Center, are also providing us many good approaches to improving decision-making and the risk management process and looking at the trend analysis that I think was so carefully articulated by the Accident Investigation Board as well. We're vetting options now to establish the independent technical authority to oversee the technical standards and requirements. And the board recommended that we develop a plan. Our intent is to develop that plan and implement it before return to flight. And again, our colleagues on the Stafford-Cubby Task Group are being very diligent about assuring we pick the very best option to proceed with that. But we're really being more ambitious than even what the board had recommended at that time in order to assure that we get this right. We've begun restructuring our engineering functions with a focus on providing rigorous independent oversight of the technical work performed by all of our programs. And specifically for the shuttle program, we've expanded the responsibility and the authority of the Space Shuttle Systems Engineering and Integration Office to improve the internal communications and coordination of all the technical issues resolved. The Space Shuttle program has added the NASA Engineering and Safety Center and a plan to add the Independent Technical Authority to formal boards and the shuttle mission management team to assure broader independent evaluation of critical decisions as they're rendered. These are just a few examples of the numerous changes that are ongoing throughout the shuttle program and the agency overall to strengthen the culture, improve how we're organized, to enhance our ability to perform the mission while focusing on the imperative that we do it as safely as we can. Throughout this process, we've regularly informed Congress about the return to flight activities. There have been 6 revisions to the implementation plan that we've first initiated back after the Columbia Accident Investigation Board report was issued on the 26th of August of last year. And since that time, each iteration and update we've released to include not only the updated analysis, but also an estimated return to flight cost. The current cost estimates provided to the committee in late July take into account all currently known potential costs, and certainly at this particular juncture, that's what our best estimate is of what it's going to take to move ahead. The prepared statement goes through that in detail, and Mr. Chairman, as you alluded, we'll get into that, I think, in much greater detail in our discussion here. It's possible that this estimate will change, and certainly will as we continue to move forward and address new challenges as they arise after the first two flights. The estimated cost right now of return to flight activities for this coming fiscal year is $643 million for 2005. Currently, we're projecting $465 million for the current fiscal year as we close out here in the next 3 weeks ahead. These estimates reflect factors. Let me just quickly move through. As a result of our efforts to meet the recommendations of the Columbia Accident Investigation Board, we've continued to identify safety-related issues that require additional work, and each of those have been identified in turn. We're undertaking major modification on all three of the shuttle orbiters simultaneously. Typically, we do that one at a time and heel-toe that process over the course of several years. We're doing all three now, since they are all down and will remain in a no-fly status until such time as the Accident Investigation Board recommendations are met. We're using that time now in order to assure that we've torn down every one of the orbiters and reconstructed it to the standards we believe are necessary to meet those recommendations. We're addressing a number of technical requirements up front, resulting in the front-loading of activities in many instances, yet demonstrating, again, the diligence based on the experience, as well as, again, the constant expert advice we're receiving from the Stafford-Covey task group. Because of the diligence, we're introducing a higher level of engineering and technical rigor in all the safety and engineering processes and practices, and many potential flight risks have been reevaluated and, in some cases, mitigated. We will never eliminate the risk of spaceflight, never. As our intent here is to try to do much better than what we've seen in the past and to eliminate as many of the known obstacles towards those safety objectives as we can do. Across the board, our flight hardware is now subject to a greater level of test, teardown, inspection, repair, and certification for flight, and not all of them are going to be met for those particular cases. We're doing the best we can in order to assure that we've gone through all the major modifications for all three of the orbiters simultaneously to assure the best condition we can. And all the elements are reassessing the adequacy of industrial processes, safety controls, integrated hazard analyses, and flight hardware test protocols. All those are being met. Along the way, I think as Senator Nelson referred to, we've also had to wrestle with the challenges of acts of nature. And as a consequence, this particular, the latest example of this with Hurricane Frances, has been a really challenging problem. I think as the Senator referred to, there are a number of cases in which the damage, particularly on the vehicle assembly building, the VAB, has lost the better part of 1,000 panels, and you're exactly right on the estimates of what's involved there in terms of how extensive that damage is. That is been a rather extended effort that will be required in order to replace that in the time ahead, and we're just now in the process of evaluating what will be required there. We've also lost the tile repair facility and the thermal blankets and so forth that are constructed in those particular shops. The roofs have caved in on a couple of those cases, and so as a result, that's going to require some readjustment of that workload either at Houston or back at Palmdale. One or the other will figure that out here in the very short time ahead. And this is what's remaining of the tile repair facility itself. That said, as bad as the damage was, I think Senator Nelson got it exactly right. All three of the orbiters, Atlantis, Discovery, and Endeavor, went through this particular hurricane unscathed. No water damage. The facilities were battened down all the way through, as well as all the hardware for the International Space Station. That has been preserved as well. So there's a number of different cases that came out of this about as well as could be expected, given the ferocity of the hurricane force winds that came through, as well as the water damage that was encountered. So all things considered, Jim Kennedy and the Kennedy Space Center team did an absolutely splendid job, in my estimation, of preparing for the worst, anticipating the worst, and riding through what was really a hellacious event that fortunately we came through it with all the orbiters preserved. What this will mean in terms of our current schedule, I don't know. We're still assessing that right now. It's been no more than 48 hours past the initial assessment, and we'll determine that in very short order. And we're working with our friends within the administration to determine exactly what the impact of that will be and what the consequences should be for the upcoming efforts. That's underway immediately. So we're doing the best we can given the 48-hour time span that has already elapsed. Let me just summarize a couple of quick points as well. We've provided, again, the six different versions of the implementation plan for the space shuttle return to flight and beyond. Each of those are updates of the previous position, just to make sure that everybody's aware of exactly where we are. And the latest one was issued not more than 10 days ago. The words for the title of the plan, Implementation Plan for Space Shuttle Return to Flight and Beyond, were carefully chosen. With the new vision for space exploration announced by the President in January, the return to flight to the space shuttle and the completion of the International Space Station are the first major steps in order to accomplish that vision objective. It's a compelling plan for exploration. It will take our pioneers and robotic explorers back to the moon and onward to Mars and beyond. And the value that we will gain by completion of the International Space Station will contribute to that particular effort. It is the first step in what the President directed us to do. In pursuing the vision on behalf of the American public, NASA will explore answers to fundamental questions of importance to science and society, develop revolutionary technologies and capabilities for the future, while doing our best to maintain our stewardship along the way. I think the American people are inspired by the current exploration activities, which go to the heart of what the vision is all about. The President got it right. The Columbia Accident Investigation Board called for a spirited debate. We got one. The President released that on January 14th, and the budget to support that has been submitted to the Congress, and we await the action on the part of the Congress to support it as well. This very day, NASA is attempting to and helping to carry out that torch of exploration forward through missions taking place in orbit around Saturn, on the surface of Mars, in Earth's orbit aboard the International Space Station with Expedition 9, and in about 2 hours over the skies of Utah, when we will conduct a daring helicopter capture of the Genesis mission capsule containing the first solar wind particles to be returned to Earth for study. Hopefully we'll get a report on that before hearings end. In summary, we're now focused throughout the agency on the painstaking work that it will take in order to return the shuttle to flight operations. We're moving forward with a great sense of responsibility and determination. And due to all the steps we've taken, we're optimistic that we're on track for returning the space shuttle to flight next spring. The STS-114 mission, which is commanded by Air Force Colonel Eileen Collins, her second command and her fifth flight, will be our next step following continued construction of the International Space Station. And, of course, we'll fly only when we're absolutely certain we've taken the necessary steps to assure that we've met all the recommendations, again, to our satisfaction, which should be the highest bar that will be established. And, again, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I thank you for the opportunity to appear this morning.
Thank you very much, and look forward to some of our discussion. General Stafford, thank you very much for joining us. The floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Give one of those microphones a little closer to you, if you would.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today and discuss the status of the Return to Flight Task Group's assessment. I have a written statement that I'd like to submit with your permission, Mr. Chairman, at this time.
To be accepted in the record.
Thank you. In July 2003, the NASA Administrator, Mr. Keefe, chartered a group under the Federal Advisory Committee Act to perform an independent assessment of the agency's actions to implement the recommendations of the Columbia Accident Investigating Board, the CAIB, as they relate to the safety and to the operational readiness of STS-114. The task group today consists of 26 members from industry, from academia, and government. Some key members also serve on the NASA Advisory Council Task Force on the International Space Station for Operational Readiness, which I chair. Also, two serve on the NASA Advisory Aerospace Safety Panel. All members bring with them recognized knowledge and expertise in a variety of the relevant fields for this task. I have with me today, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the leaders of the task group, three panels, Mr. Dan Crippen, who heads our management panel, has a strong reputation for objective and insightful analysis. A lot of you know him. Mr. Joe Cusipoli, who leads the technical panel. Mr. Cusipoli has had more than 40 years of aerospace experience, management experience. Colonel Jim Adamson, who is the leader of the operations panel. Colonel Adamson is a former astronaut. He has an extensive background in aerodynamics, operation, and business management. These gentlemen's impressive background is submitted with the record. And they are deeply involved in the task group's activities on a daily basis, and they will be available to answer the specific details of your questions. And since August of 2003, the task group has conducted extensive fact-finding activities at all levels within the NASA agency and at the contractor team. The members have visited NASA and the contractor facilities, participated in the teleconferences. We've reviewed documents, conducted interviews, received briefings, observed test simulations, and program reviews. And also, Mr. Chairman, when appropriate, members of the task group have interviewed and talked with former CAIB members. The task group to date has conducted 4 open public meetings in which it reviewed NASA's progress. We've issued 2 interim reports, and the next interim report now is scheduled for October. The task group is encouraged by NASA's progress. We've observed the people of NASA are engaged and dedicated to correcting the deficiencies that led to the Columbia accident. We believe that NASA has made substantial progress in many, many areas. At the same time, we believe the agency faces significant challenges ahead and has considerable work ahead of it in some areas before it will be ready to fly again. To date, the task group has formally assessed and conditionally closed 5 of the 15 recommendations from the CAIB. I want to assure this committee that the task group will continue to monitor NASA's progress in the implementation of these recommendations as we work to fully close each one. Now, looking at some of the challenges, the task group believes NASA's most important work is efforts to eliminate the critical asset debris, i.e. the shedding of debris from that external tank. The agency has made considerable progress in this area. If it could be ensured that no critical debris would come from the external tank, the immediate cause of the loss of Columbia would certainly be rectified. While analytical and testing techniques will allow a level of comfort before launch, and advances in the non-destructive inspection techniques may add some confidence to this, it'll still be impossible to guarantee no critical debris will be shed. Additionally, it may not be possible to obtain statistically significant data verifying external tank conditions even by the end of the shuttle program. Therefore, on-orbit inspection and repair capability remain necessary to reduce the risk to future flights. And since our last report, it has become apparent that NASA continues to face some technical challenges in developing these capabilities. Now, I might report, Mr. Chairman, even in the last 2 weeks, there has been significant progress made in the sensors to inspect in flight on board the shuttle. Should one or more, both of these capabilities not be sufficiently developed by the shuttle's return to flight, the potential for a crew to await a rescue mission at the International Space Station becomes a logical consideration for the next launch. Therefore, the task group is starting to assess the safe haven capability. A universal